This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on what we know about the confrontation between the Russian Federation, 175,000 troops, we're told, deployed or will be deployed around Ukraine and Crimea, and Ukraine itself, which is supported by NATO. Ukraine is not a member of NATO, but it's supported by NATO, if to understand the remarks of NATO ministers meeting in these last days in the Baltic states. I read from the Financial Times within hours, from Brussels, EU and NATO allies have swung behind the Biden administration's assessment that Russia may be poised to invade Ukraine following unprecedented sharing of U.S. intelligence on Moscow's military preparations. Weeks of sustained U.S. diplomatic engagement, goes the article in the Financial Times. Henry Foy is the author. With European governments, backed by sharing of intelligence normally reserved for its closest allies, have helped convince some previously skeptical capitals, including Berlin, that the Kremlin could soon order its troops into Ukraine. The effort has galvanized support for the need for robust sanctions threats to deter the Kremlin. Professor, a very good evening to you.
Good evening.
The Russian point of view. The Russian point of view is it's reading this document as I am reading it, and it is aware that the U.S. is sharing intelligence with Western European allies and maybe not strong allies. What is Russia's best hand here? It's often been said that Mr. Putin plays a weak hand well. What is his hand, and what does he want out of this game? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, the first point I would make is that we're really talking about Putin. We're not talking about Russia. Russia is absolutely secure. Nobody threatens Russia. The threat is to Putin, who's 69 years old. He's worth $40 billion or more, and he's never done anything for Russia. His popularity is declining, so his hold on Russia is slipping. And I think that what we have to look at is his desire somehow to create a crisis or create a confrontation that will strengthen his hand within Russia. Now, I think it's quite right to describe him as playing a weak hand here, because an actual invasion of Ukraine, God knows what it would lead to, but it would lead to nothing good for Russia.
Because Russia's point of view includes history, the case is made by Mr. Lavrov, most recently at an OEC dinner and other remarks, that Russia is the victim, the attacked, the aggressor is NATO or Ukraine. The case is this. In 2014, when the government changed, it was a coup directed by NATO or elements of NATO to dislodge a duly elected president who favored Russia and Russia's trade agreements. That is the case Mr. Lavrov is making in 2021. He's making it in person. He's making it on the airwaves. And I understand they're making it in Moscow as well to the television audience. Russia is saying, we're not the aggressors. We're trying to restore stability.
Well, my first thought is that if you look at that period, which was many months, the thing that precipitated it was the unwillingness of the Ukrainian president to sign an agreement that Ukraine had concluded with Europe. And that was what upset the Ukrainians. The second point is, if it was clear then that it was a NATO coup, why didn't they tell us? Why did they wait until December of 2021 to publicize this information, which is arguably extremely important to understanding our history? And the third point I would say is that NATO has no interest. NATO has never wanted to invade Russia. NATO was created to protect states that were threatened by Russia. You will remember the famous Chicken Kiev speech written by Condi, in which I think it was President Bush asked the Ukrainians not to go for independence. So I think that what Mr. Lavrov is doing is simply creating a pretext. We don't take the historical basis here seriously, but the present day consequences are very great.
The second charge made by Mr. Putin most recently is that NATO wants Ukraine in order to base missiles in Ukraine that can be in Moscow in 5 minutes, and therefore he is seeking to defend his people from NATO aggression. Now, this reminds me, and all of us, of the Cuban Missile Crisis. The allegation by Mr. Khrushchev, as it all started, was America has put medium-range or intermediate-range missiles in Turkey that can be in Moscow in X number of minutes. Therefore, we're going to put intermediate and medium-range missiles in Cuba that can be in Washington in X number of minutes. That was resolved arduously, and there was no particular agreement that it won't happen again. It appears to be happening again, Professor, and Mr. Putin, who is historically sophisticated, knows that this allegation worked in 1962, and perhaps it'll work in 2021.
Well, I don't think the parallel is exact. The first thing is that Putin was not just talking about ordinary missiles. He talked about hypersonic missiles, which are something that Russia is a leader in. Ukraine doesn't have any hypersonic missiles, and NATO doesn't have any hypersonic ICBM sort of missiles. China may have one, but Russia is the leader. The second point is that there are already enough places near to Moscow. I think of Poland, for instance, which is a NATO member, and any number of other countries in Europe, where if NATO wanted to base missiles, they could, and perhaps they do, although we're not supposed to have medium-range ballistic missiles. But you gain nothing, really, by adding Ukraine to the possible basing locations. You've already got enough to to rain missiles down on Russia if you were mad enough to want to do that.
The third point of view from Moscow, if I understand it correctly, is that NATO looks to cut us off from our Black Sea Fleet. Crimea, Sevastopol, that is the Black Sea Fleet. Without that, Russia has no easy access to the Mediterranean and to the warm waters of the Atlantic. And therefore, Russia does not accept that Crimea is Ukraine. It does not accept that the people of Donbass, the rebellious part of Donbass, are going to be subsumed by the trustworthy Kiev parliament. It maintains that it's supporting freedom fighters and supporting its navy. NATO doesn't have an easy answer to this. So the question is, does this work well in Russian news? It does. They repeat it all the time, Professor.
Well, I think that my experience with Russia is that although the people know more now than they did in Soviet times, Putin is doing everything he can to reverse that situation. But what you say about the naval issues is correct, although remember that both the Russian and the Ukrainian fleets were based in Crimea before. What happened in 2014 was that the Ukrainian command structure and the fleet defected to Russia. That said, having a fleet in the Black Sea does not get you even to the Mediterranean, let alone to the Atlantic. Closing off access to the Black Sea is easy. The states both to the south and to the north are NATO members. You have to transit the Bosporus. It's very, very precarious. But this is actually a legitimate part of a tremendous question that Russia faces, which is that she is essentially a landlocked country. Until the foundation of St. Petersburg, under Peter the Great, the only sea access to Russia was through the Arctic port of Archangel, which you reach by going around the North Cape and then heading in the Arctic Sea south. And this is impossible. So Russia has always had a very serious problem with access to the sea. Gaining control of Crimea or greater hegemony over the Black Sea, however, is not going to solve this fundamental geographical problem.
I'm speaking with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, of the Russian point of view about the confrontation that we're told is at the edge of war in and around Ukraine. What is Ukrainian point of view when we come back? This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.